Hi, good evening, everybody. I'm Howie Hinden, the president of the AAPMD, and I want to welcome you to another one of our AAPMD webinars. And tonight we have another webinar that has been really directed and run by the physical therapy section of the AAPMD, who's led by Brad Gilden. He has done such a fantastic job, and he's going to introduce our speaker in a few minutes. Robert Skip George, chiropractor and BRI graduate, who's going to give us a wonderful talk. I've had a chance to preview it, so you're going to love it. And I just want to take a few minutes to tell you about my friend Brad Gilden, who's our leader. And if you look up, you can see his picture in color, someday I'm going to get a picture in color to put up on the screen. I was thinking right before the webinar tonight, a couple of years ago, we mentioned to Brad, like to include physical therapists in our conferences, because dentists and physical therapists are made to work together. Absolutely. And so through his efforts, we had Greg Johnson and Ron Aruska be part of our conference like 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago. And it was great. And every single year it has grown from that, where we have more and more physical therapists, dentists networking together. And my dream is every dentist and every physical therapist will have a partner all throughout the country and throughout the world, so that patients can get full and optimal treatment. And so now we've created a physical therapy section where we have monthly webinars. We've had over 300 people registered at every single one of them. It's growing all the time. Our AAPMD, Patty Gindorf, our administrator, said, as of April, we have 100 new members in the AAPMD this year. And so we're quickly becoming the leader in airway and collaborative care, which is great. And thank you, Brad, for helping that become a possibility. And who knows where we're going to grow from that. So just a few things. Next Wednesday, we have Stasha Gomanak, who we've had, and a neurologist who is a leading expert on vitamin D, and she's going to talk about what's the truth and what's not the truth about vitamin D, how it can be used to boost your immune system, maybe to prevent severe COVID disease, and what's true and what's not true, and how some of the studies you may read may not be telling you the whole truth because of their design. So again, we're interactive questions. Webinar. You can put your comments in the chat box and ask your questions. And Skip has promised that he's going to get done early, so we're going to have plenty of time for questions and discussions. So please put your questions on. You'll get to them at the end of the presentation. No one else can see your question, but if you write something in the chat box, everybody can see it. So if you want to ask your question, put it in the chat box. Everybody's muted so that Skip can present his material, and let us know if all our webinars are recorded. And we now have, let's go back one. We now have 105 webinars in our library. If you're an AAPMD member, and I hope everybody is or will become one, all these webinars are free. You can watch them as many times as you want, as often as you want. If not, they're $35 per session. And you can find out more or go to aapmd.org and join. My last important thing to tell you is September 23rd to the 26th in Atlanta, Georgia. We're holding our next conference. It's going to be live and in person. And it seems like the world is working out okay, because places are opening up. Atlanta is at full capacity, and we have great keynote speakers. We have Ron Lustig, who just had a new book called Diabolical, Metabolical, which is the relation of food and sleep and chronic disease. If you haven't read the book, it's a really great book to read. And we're going to have 3 days of physical therapy that Brad is in charge of putting together. And he hasn't told me all the, but it's going to be great. I know that we're going to have Mariana Roccobato, Ronna Ruska, Greg Johnson, and Brad is part of that. So I think there are a lot of physical therapists here. Join us in Atlanta. It's going to be great. So now I'm going to turn the mic over to Brad. And Brad, if you'll do the honors of introducing Skip, that'll be great.
Happy to do so. Thank you, Howie. I was really excited after speaking to Skip when he agreed to present a webinar tonight. I've known Skip for about 3 years, and I've really had a wonderful time getting to know him. He's an amazing presenter, and we've actually had the opportunity to share some patients as well, coast to coast. So that's been a lot of fun too. Quick background on Skip. He's been practicing. He's a chiropractor. He's been practicing for more than 40 years, primarily in the San Diego and La Jolla area. And I just found out that he's actually moving to Logan, Utah. So amazing opportunity for Skip, and so excited for you for that move for you. So Skip's primary lens of practice is teaching is postural restoration. And he's a primary instructor on faculty for the Postural Restoration Institute. He teaches the primary course, Postural Respiration, that really focuses in on the diaphragm and how the body orients around that diaphragm. And when the position of the body doesn't allow for appropriate diaphragm activity, then things kind of fall apart. The neck starts to compensate, and you start to see all of these compensations throughout the body as a result of that. He also teaches a secondary course, which is one of my favorite courses, Cervical Revolution, that really integrates the neck, the occlusion, the cranium, and relates treatment to patterned cervical pathomechanics. And so discussing a theme for tonight, we thought it would be a lot of fun really looking at cranial facial asymmetries and kind of what the face tells you about what the rest of the body is doing. So really utilizing the face as kind of a story to tell you what else could be going on in the body. And I'm really excited to hear Skip talk about this. It's going to be a fun lecture, and Skip, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Oh, Brad, thanks so much for that introduction, and Howie, thank you also for the opportunity to present tonight. I appreciate it. Thank you for to everybody that is tuning in, and I hope that I can integrate or show how we integrate in PRI the occlusal system with the rest of the body and the rest of the body with the occlusal cranial system. I first was introduced to PRI 9 years ago. I took this course called Postural Respiration, which is one of our primary courses. And, you know, I was pretty comfortable in my practice. I'd been practicing for 30 plus years. I had it what I considered my practice and career just in a great little groove. I have a little rehab clinic in La Jolla. Over the years, though, I'd noticed that patterns and positions kept showing up, and I didn't understand them. So I thought, well, you know, there's certain things I just won't figure out, and I'll keep looking. I took this course in PRI, and it absolutely stunned me. Postural respiration was something that intrigued me so much because I saw that this relationship with respiration, with breathing, and how it affected the axial skeleton via the rib cage, and that respiration affected every joint and system in the body. That blew my mind. And in many ways, that was a very chiropractic concept, that you have this system called the spine and all the nerves that exit it, but what's it being driven by? So I took some more courses and I went to Ron Horeska, who's the founder of PRI. And I said, Ron, I met him and we just hit it off. I said, how come chiropractors can't be certified like physical therapists? He said, well, nobody asked. So I said, well, I'm asking. And I became the first chiropractor to become a PRC in the Institute. And then shortly thereafter, I was invited, and it was such an honor and privilege to be a faculty member. So here I am. I teach after the first time I took this course, Postural Respiration, I'm referring to, which is a primary course, along with another course called Myokinematics and another course called Pelvis Restoration. So, excuse me, it's been 9 years to the month with my first exposure to PRI. In PRI, we have these primary courses that are the foundational courses. We call it postural, pelvis, and myokin. And those courses essentially talk about, yes, there's respiration, the diaphragm attachments to rib cage and sternum and lumbar spine, and chains of muscles, along with air or air pressure in a chest wall that move a human body. And so one thing to remember tonight, in PRI, we have a concept called lateralization. That is, we love one side of our body. And I'm going to describe why we love one side of our body. We love one side of our pelvis. We love one side of our rib cage. We love one side of our neck. We love one side of our jaw and occlusion quite often. And so I'm going to attempt to tie in this occlusal, neck, thorax, pelvis system, show you what's driving it in terms of asymmetries, and give you sort of a 30,000-foot view, overview of PRI. And at the end of our discussion tonight, I'll have you all stand up and we're going to do a technique that actually helps you get off one side of your body, which would be your right side, which we all love, whether we know it or not, even if we're left-handed or not. And most of us are right-handed. And the goal tonight is for you to be able to stand up, to get on your left side and actually like it. And many of you are thinking, well, I like my left side. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But the point is, I want to send you home with something that is a PRI technique that helps us shift laterally from the right side of our body to the left. So let's go into, this is what I'm going to start with. Postural mechanics are regulated by our appendicular skeletal muscular interplay. Wow, with our oral facial skeletal musculature? That's a bold statement. And I hope that as we continue on tonight, you'll see some of these relationships. Again, I'm going to give a broad overview. I hope I whet your appetite to come to a course. Those foundational courses I was talking about, those are really bottom-up courses. So what Brad said is I also teach a secondary course called Cervical Revolution. It's all about the cervical cranial occlusal system. That's a top-down course. That's what you all do. If you're dealing with occlusion, that is really a top-down occlusal neurologic issue. What we like doing in PRI, especially when I integrate with a dentist and other practitioners integrate with dentists, we like to have the ability to integrate with a top-down practitioner and see the relationship with, for instance, lateralization and breathing, how it affects bite, and also going the other way, how bite affects the rest of the axial skeleton and respiration. You know, for instance, if you can't manage a pelvis and a rib cage, if you can't figure that out, then an atlanto-occipital joint and a tongue will try to compensate. And when that happens, you get that compensation, then airway breathing start to manifest. And if you have a real active tongue that's not quiet because it's trying to figure out how to move a neck that perhaps has got forward head posture or is locked and stiff, then our job is to see if we can create a more balanced and neutral system in throughout the entire body, from the pelvis up. We have an attitude, for instance, about the sacrum, the sternum. And I know many of you are really familiar with this bone called a sphenoid. How we see it in PRI is that oftentimes a neck or an OA joint will start affecting an occipital bone. That occipital bone will start affecting a sphenoid. That sphenoid will start driving position of a temporal bone complex, those paired bones, which, by the way, match pelvic bones in terms of position and function, maybe not as much movement, but in terms of vectors and force. And then that temporal system, those paired bones, driven by that S bone called a sphenoid, will have a dramatic effect on a jaw. And we'll see this later on in pictures, that a jaw may go left quite often because of this positional driving from down below in that is perhaps respiration and also natural asymmetry driven processes. So let's continue on into the PowerPoint here. Let's just look at an overview. These are the static structural asymmetries that we're just all born with. You've got a dominant left brain, right visual field. I'll just go through this real quick. Right vagus nerve is longer than the left. Pericardium, position, left mediastinum. You all know this from basic anatomy. Dome of liver on the right side, under the right abdominal cavity, three lobes of lung on the right side, two lobes of lung on the left, more surface area, right versus left pleura. I'm going through this pretty quickly, but here's the kicker. Bigger, stronger, hemidiaphragm, right versus left. Just remember that. That's a big deal because airway and respiration in this organization is a primary issue, obviously. Right diaphragm, different than the left. So it's like there are two different diaphragms, larger diameter, thicker central tendon. I mean, this is a driving force. This diaphragm actually drives our pelvis to the right side, and I'll show you a picture of that. Larger central tendon, higher central dome. It's better able to maintain the dome shape because of the liver underneath it. You've got more crura fibers and fascia on the right side. I'll show you a picture in a moment. Crural attachments are lower on the vertebral bodies. I mean, better abdominal eccentric opposition. That means if you look at a picture of most people or just watch them wherever you are, you'll see a right shoulder might be lower in a lot of people because of that dominant side we love going to, stronger abdominal wall. And this is concentrically effective for respiration. In other words, the diaphragm on the right does pretty well with respiration as opposed to the one on the left, who's more of a, oh, it's a spinal stabilizer, often to a fault, which has a smaller diameter. Everything the left diaphragm is or isn't, you can compare to the right side. Thinner central tendon, smaller central tendon, less able to maintain a dome shape. Less crural fibers and fascia, crural attachment higher on vertebral bodies. Poor abdominal. So this is a key. In PRI, we use muscles or chains of muscles and air to reposition and realign for a lot of reasons. To get a person off of an end range, get them to love the other side of their body better than they really are aware of. And ultimately, really, to create a better airway throughout the entire system. Because if a person is using accessory muscles for respiration versus having a good abdominal wall integration, you all know this, their airway is going to be affected. It's going to affect their jaw, create headaches, neck pain. Listen, I've adjusted so many spines trying to get the pain to go away, not knowing that it's an airway problem. I do now. So anyway, these are the differences, right versus left hemidiaphragm. And you can see on this picture, I love this Clementi anatomy. You can see on the right side, and this is a picture of a rib cage facing us. Look at the crural fibers on the right side versus the left. I mean, there's more of them. They're bigger. They're stronger. And that diaphragm will have a tendency, always will win and take us to the right side. No big deal. It's just that we want to train the human body via PRI techniques to use the left side of our body and kick in that left diaphragm so it becomes more of a muscle respiration and less of a bongo drum. And this is what it looks like with a PRI drawing. You can see the attachments, for instance, of the crural fibers, but you can also see that there is a relationship between the hip flexors and the diaphragm as they attach to the lumbar spine. So breathing affects position of the pelvis. It affects, or the diaphragm, that is, affects breathing, and breathing affects position of the pelvis, the diaphragm, the pelvic floor, ultimately the neck, and the position of the cranial bones. You breathe 17 to 22,000 times a day. The rib cage and diaphragm are the most dynamic structures in our body. Pretty amazing. PRI, really, Ron Horesca, brilliant. Ron Horesca started out in dental school and decided he wanted to get out of the mouth and get into the whole body and take the mouth and occlusion and the cranial system with him. So respiration became such a core of the core, if I may, issue with PRI. So you'll see this pelvis facing us, a right-oriented pelvis. And what you're seeing is that sacrum is turning to the right. It's taking the lumbar spine along with it. You'll see a difference in the shape of the left hemipelvis versus the right, or the ilia. Even the femurs, if you look at the femur, for instance, on the right side, it's turned in more into that socket, that hip socket, or that acetabulum. And that brain says on the right side, yeah, I'm home. I like it here. I'm stable. I'm safe. The other side is saying, yeah, this leg is swinging. And it never fully allows a body, because of the diaphragm, which goes into the spine, and then the psoas muscle that goes into the pelvis and hip that is being driven by the diaphragm, that's driving position and alignment of the pelvis. So we begin to see that there's an axioskeletal component. And the axioskeletal component is really being driven by this diaphragm. And our natural born asymmetries, our neurology, we love one side of our body. Why do we love one side of our body? Well, heck, if we are perfectly balanced, it might be pretty hard to overcome inertia. So this stable, this structure is meant to be a little unstable, so we can move and throw and run and do everything we do, reach, write, play piano, guitar, you name it. So I talked about chains of muscles. We have all these chains of muscles in our human body. There's a brachial chain, and that's this chain that's really above that question mark called a diaphragm. These are the lists of all those muscles. I'm not going to quiz you on them later. They're just there. Intercostals, delt pec, Simpson's fascia, that's this fascia deep in the neck. Triangularis sternae is a little muscle behind the rib cage. SCM, scalenes, big, big, big accessory muscles. This is so huge. We need dentists quite often to help us disocclude oftentimes a jaw from a maxilla. And quite often that will help to relieve the scalenes and how we breathe and relieve a neck. Remember, I said we rely on one side of our body often to a fault. We go to an end range and love it and stay there and wear it out. We can do that in a TMJ. We can create TMD. We can create so much tension on a masseter and an anterior temporalis and a buccinator and a lateral medial pterygoid that that's actually going to affect that joint on either side, the cranial bones, because it's like that clamping down throughout the whole body is driven often by respiration. Then down below in the pelvis, we've got a diaphragm. Obviously, you can see the diaphragm below and above. The diaphragm, the iliac, psoas, TFL, vastus lateralis, biceps femoris. I know I'm going through this fast. I just wanted to introduce these chains of muscles to you because now the interesting part is we can see how those chains of muscles present. And we can see that this individual, if you look, and just kind of take this picture in. The picture on the left, a drawing by Elizabeth Noble, is something that shows this prominent right SCM. No big deal, but the right SCM is great, for instance, at turning the head to a left, turning the head to the left. But in this picture, it's becoming a muscle of accessory respiration, not a supportive muscle of the cranium and the neck. You also see one side has a different, smaller shape. That right chest wall is in a state of exhalation. It's smaller. It's more contracted. There's a shadow of that chest where that we call that apical chest wall, that chest wall on the right side, that shadow shows that it doesn't expand. And so you've got a more dominant abdominal wall on the right side than the left. That pec is smaller on the right side. And then we shift over to the left and you see, gosh, a big pec. You see this rib cage that has a different shape. Those ribs have more air. That left side of the rib cage has got asymmetrical respiration. It's got inhalation or more inhalation on the left side because of the flatter diaphragm than on the right side. And that puts a twist in the system. So if you remember looking at the pelvis that was oriented or positioned to the right, now you have a rib cage with more air on the left side pushing you like a beach ball of air over to your left and actually rotating or counter-rotating a thorax to the left side. That's one half of the gait cycle. No big deal, but we've got to be able to now transition through what we call neutral. In PRI, we test for that. We have cervical tests. We've got thoracic tests. We have lumbar and pelvic tests to determine, number one, what position that human being is in front of us and what specific PRI technique we're going to apply to allow that body to rest, to allow that body to breathe, to open up an airway, to relax a jaw, to affect vision, just tension in that OA joint. That's what we're about. We're about balancing and restoring human bodies to a more natural movement, to a more parasympathetic or resting state if possible. We love sympathetics for performance. We love parasympathetics for healing. And downregulation. I just love that word, downregulation. Now, let's talk real quick. I know all of you are probably more familiar with these muscles now. Now we're going into the temporomandibular cervical chain. Temporalis, masseter, the pterygoid, medial pterygoid, which affects the palatine bones. We have a course of cranium, occlusal cranial courses that are our tertiary courses where Ron gets into the nitty-gritty of how these muscles affect vectors of force in the cranium. And I'll show you pictures of how those vectors of force actually show up visually, and you see them in your practice all the time. Rectus capitis posterior major, extensor of the head, obliquus capitis, rectus capitis anterior, longus coli, and longus capitis. Now, these muscles, they tend to be more dominant on the right side of the neck, in addition to the scalenes that come from the chain below that are working in harmony, connecting the thorax to the neck, to the cranium, to the jaw. So we begin to see this overview and this interplay, interconnection of all these muscles. You can probably begin, even though I don't go into it in detail, but airway is such a big deal. If we get stuck on one side of our body and then compensate, for instance, with forward head posture or mouth breathing or just the inability to have more balanced breathing in a rib cage, you can see how important respiration is to the entire system. Okay, here's a jaw. You can see that this jaw is not a perfectly symmetric. It's not perfectly symmetric, is it? You actually see a jaw that is attached to temporal bones. One temporal bone, the one on the left, is what we call externally rotated and tipped anteriorly, just like pelvises do down below. Now, does a cranium look like that, that has that much movement? No, we're over illustrating just a little bit, but you'll see the consequences as we get further into the slide presentation. The temporal bone on the other side is posteriorly and internally tipped. That is driving the condyles of the mandible, the one on the right forward, the one on the left back, deviating that mandible to the left. Now, you may see a mandible that deviates to the right. I'm going to just touch on an osteopathic issue. Osteopathy talks about cranial lesions. When I see a jaw that deviates to the right, I suspect they could have a compensation in their cranium called a right torsion. Talk about that in the cervical course. But when you see that, excuse me, a deviated jaw to the right, I just suspect could be a torsion patient. And then when they come in with all kinds of TMD and headaches and vision problems, I'm thinking, yeah, they have a torsion perhaps. Torsions are only really verified by CAT scan. However, if they come in with symptoms, I'm going to be talking to a dentist right away. And I have a good one in town that I use that we work really well together. So his name is Dr. Dave DeRozier. Shout out to him. So I've talked about positions. Down below in our body, our pelvis is driven by this right-oriented position we call the left AIC. That means the muscles that go below, the chain of muscles that go below the diaphragm down into the lower extremity, plus the diaphragm itself, turn a pelvis to the right. That's called the left AIC chain of muscles positioning us over to our right leg. The brachial chain, which I showed and quickly listed those muscles, that's more dominant on the right side. And that pulls us over to the right side, and actually then with respiration will help to counter-rotate a thorax to the left. So then all of that will affect the cervical spine, the OA joint, and ultimately the cranium itself. So the cranium will be positioned that reflects the dominant chain of muscles called the temporomandibular chain, as it's reflecting and in harmony with the brachial chain, and then the what we call the left AIC or anterior-interior chain. So they work in harmony together or disharmony. So let's talk about this. This is so left side bending. This is an osteopathic concept. And this is what we call a physiological position of the cranium that is most often seen in what I just said. Left AC, right BC, right TMCC pattern. You can see left, right, and right. That is talking about we're really getting lateralized to the right. The left AIC just means it's pushing you to the right. That's what that first sentence says. In this movement, here it goes. The sphenoid bone bends. Oh my gosh, let's talk about the sphenoid. Vascular, neurology, it's like light as a bird wing, but so much is sense. That's where we're sensing so much through that sphenoid. And so the sphenoid bone bends toward the occipital bone on the same side as both the occipital and sphenoid rotate together in the same side around a coronal axis. What does that mean? Tell you what it means. I'm standing on my right leg. My right shoulder is low, okay? And something's got to happen to my neck. So what happens to my neck is it actually flexes to the left as my atlas is pushing up into my occipital bone. My occipital bone is getting pushed up on the right side, taking the sphenoid with it. Now here's the kicker, and it gets osteopathically sort of confusing. But left side bending refers to the sphenoid is being high on the right side. You could say it's left side bending to the left, but let's just say that left side bending is being created, and I'll show you a picture in a moment, by that atlas pushing up on an occipital bone, taking the sphenoid and the entire cranium with it. And that atlas pushing up is really being driven by respiration often. It could be occlusion that's driving it as well. But let's just say that that atlas driving up on the occipital bone, taking the sphenoid with it, taking the cranium with it, taking the jaw with it. And if we can't get off that right side, the muscles that Louise Kelly, my colleague, talking next month, brilliant PT and good friend of mine, and I hope she's listening, she's going to be talking about the infrahyoid musculature and neck as it relates to gait and breathing, and don't miss it. So the fact is, all these muscles will be affected if you can't get off that right side and actually shift. So we're going to be talking about that coming up. Here's a vertex view. This is from James and Strokin, a couple of dentists. This is a wonderful article. When I first read this article 4 years ago, it just set the hook in me. I said, I've got to teach cervical revolution after I read this. I didn't understand what I've seen for so long. And there it is. That's the vertex view. If you look from above down, you're going to see vectors of force in the cranium. In other words, in that right TMCC, left side bending position, the occipital bone is up high on the right. You don't see it here, but I'm just saying it rotates to the left, but because of all those dominant muscles and bite and occlusion and breathing patterns, the sphenoid will have a tendency to turn to the right a little bit as the occipital bone is turning to the left. So if you look at this straight down, we call the right side of the occipital bone where that red arrow is, we call that internal rotation from above on the right side of that occipital bone. On the left side, that's external rotation. If you look at this sphenoid bone from above, I know it might get a little confusing, but that's actually going into external rotation on the black arrow on the right of the sphenoid and internal rotation on the left side. I will have a little graph in a little bit to show you that. I'm going to move past that because we're running low, but I wanted to show you this is the left side bending is named for the side in which the greater wing is low. Okay? I confused it a little bit, so let's call this the left side bending is named according to the side in which the greater wing is low. So this occipital bone is being pushed up by an atlas on the right side, taking the sphenoid with it. The left part or the left side of the sphenoid is lower. So and the right side is higher. So we're going to call it the left side bending is named for the side which is low. The sphenoid and the occipital bone, however, move closer together on the right side in the transverse plane. And that was the picture I just showed you. Now, if your head's spinning, you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. When I first saw this, my head spun too. Then I took this course. I know I'm selling the course, but please come to the course. Once I got this, it cleared up so much as to what I had been seeing for years but could not define. Anyway, let's move on. I'm going to move on from there. Again, this is that same picture we saw, but you can see that the jaw is going to be affected. Here's that mandible, and we saw that mandible temporal bone picture before. The mandible is actually deviating to the left because of the temporal bone influence as the maxilla is going to the right. And I'll show you pictures of that in a few moments. Here's that list of what I was telling you. You're not going to get this tonight, and if you do, great. You don't have to get it. It's just a list of when a person is on the right stance, down in that pelvis model, I love my right leg, remember that? This correlates with what's going on in the sphenoid, occipital, temporal, maxilla system. This is what we observe in PRI, and it shows up every day in our office. It's like, oh my gosh, why didn't I see it before? And it's showing up in your office too. And our job to work together as chiropractors, physical therapists, dental practitioners, and whoever else is online is to be able to say, you know, a lot of the problems with airway may be coming from below, but a ton are also coming from above. And the inability to manage a neck and an airway and an occlusal system. So, temporal bones follow the occipital bone. Thus, the high occipital bone on the right contributes to right temporal bone internal rotation or a left side bending rotation. It all connects. That occipital bone and neck is driving it. The atlas is driving into the occipital bone, which is driving into the cranial system, which is affecting the occlusal system, and it can work back the other way all the way down to the heels. So it's pretty astounding how this system works. Now, you're going to see all cranial bones are bulged on the left side, such as the temporal bone, parietal bone, etc. They'll express what's called external rotation. All right. This is taken from an osteopathic book, a wonderful book called Craniosacral Biodynamics. It's up here right in front of me. I have it in my library. Highly recommend that book. But the interesting thing is you see your airway specialists, and then all of a sudden you look and you see exhalation extension position of what? A cranium? Yeah, it's an osteopathic concept that respiration not only affects our axial skeleton, but it affects the cranium as well. So, more on that at a later date. Oh, bite. Dental configuration of posterior teeth in left side bend are drawn from the anterior view. The diagram shows an internal rotation of the palate. You can see that on the right side, the palate is a little bit lower. You have a medial pterygoid that's pulling down on that palate, for instance. And that's part of that dominant right TMCC chain we're talking about, which is different. Now we see all those asymmetries I started with when we began, those static asymmetries and the neurologic asymmetries. And this also shows up in asymmetries in the occlusal system and the cranium. So there's a good picture of that. And this is just a picture from our cervical revolution course of directions of the maxilla, right to left side, that you'll see lateral intrusion that goes to one side, to the left, etc. This is a facial presentation of a left side bend patient. Now, remember, when I say left side bend, you could also say, gosh, this person loves to stand on their right side. They love to have their pelvis oriented to the right. They love to have their body lateralized to the right. And they love their torso to turn to the left with more air in the left side of the chest wall, less air on the right side of the chest wall. And ultimately, we see this shows up on this convergence on the left side of her face and the divergence on the right side of her face. Look at the jaw line compared to the nose. It's pulling hard left. And we're going to show you some pictures of, gosh, face morphology. One side of the cheekbone is going to be more prominent than the left, etc. Same here. Here's another picture of a person that has a very similar pattern. I'm going to go through these pretty quick. Here's the tendencies we see up in the cranium and the jaw. Greater wing of the sphenoid on left is low. That's the left side bending position, or osteopathically they call it lesions. But the point is, everything in PRI, we say, well, you do one side of your body okay. Let's get you through what we call a neutral zone and get you to the left side of your body and then have you be able to go back and forth really well while you can breathe, keep a neck that's loose and a tongue that's quiet. How's that for starters? High maxilla on the left, mandible to the right or to the left, prominent right SCM, we saw that. Counterclockwise facial rotation. That's what we just saw. That face goes counterclockwise. Prominent left ear flare, limited passive lateral flexion. Now, these are tests that we do. This limited passive lateral flexion of O on A to the left and limited passive lateral flexion above C4 to the right. Those are tests that we provide in our cervical revolution course. What we love doing in PRI is taking care of all this foundational stuff to get a person to be able to be neutral or balanced and relaxed in their body. Teach that person how to do that, then go to you, the dentist, the occlusal specialist, and say, you know what? I've got them in a really good position. They've got occlusal issues. How about if they get their PRI exercise is done, get into a nice, neutral, relaxed position, then fit them for a split. Because what I've noticed, and it just happened this week, I had a patient come in. I asked her, what side of, and she has some bite issues, what side of your molars do you typically feel? She said the right side. I did PRI stuff, not in the neck, but down in the pelvis. I said, what side are you touching now in your mouth? She said, both. I think that's kind of astounding, as the whole system was reset. So we love sending people to dentists with a system that is more or less neutral, and then it's like fit that dental appliance, orthotic, mandibular, or maxillary appliance according to hopefully getting in harmony with the rest of the system. So we'll go to the next slide. Mandible oriented to the left. Here's what we see. Mandible is oriented to the left on a cranium that is on a neck that is oriented to the right in the transverse plane and laterally flexed to the left in the frontal plane. In the left side bending position, the upper neck is rotated to the left in the transverse plane. More on that in one of our courses. Right TMCC. So that was that muscle. When we say right or left chain of muscles, typically this is the right TMCC is the dominant chain. We want this chain of muscles to let go. We want that chain of muscles to inhibit. That's what we do as PRI practitioners. We help people inhibit those muscles that are holding on either to the right or extended backwards, pushing their head forward, restricting their airway, getting choked by their hyoid. So this is what we see in this right TMCC left side bending. Here's a person, visual. You've probably seen 1,000 of these in your office of fullness and bulge on the right side of their face, flared left ear, high mouth angle on the left. So pretty standard. And here are the arrows. This is the typical representation of the plane of occlusion of an individual in right stance. So here we see this axioskeletal asymmetries as it correlates to neck, OA, and ultimately facial, cranial, occlusal position and presentation. Here's another patient, right to left side. Look at that fullness there on the right side. Her face is bending to the left. You can see that there is a more prominent maxilla on the right side in that externally rotated position, et cetera, et cetera. So look at that prominent left ear, deviation of the jaw to the left. This is the same picture. This guy, you know, same prominent ear. Look at the squinting. He's trying to balance himself out, not only with his occlusal system and his neck and his breathing, but his ocular system as well. So quite often in PRI, not only do we use orthotics for feet, we'll recommend orthotics or an appliance for the mouth, but sometimes it's a visual, it's a vestibular ocular reflex issue, and we need to deal with a visual issue. Now, let's do this. Let's do a standing cervical cranial repositioning technique. Everybody's got to stand up to do this. And of course, I don't know if you are or not, but hopefully you stand up. This is designed to position your right BC or your right brachial chain in right rotation, or the opposite way it usually goes. We want to really take that right BC and quiet it down. And the right TMCC in right flexion, because it loves left flexion. The cervical and cranial neutrality will be encouraged with co-activation of abdominals with the right SCM and co-activation of the left lateral pterygoid. Really? The left lateral pterygoid with standing? Now listen. Left gaze, occlusion, and ground. This is a highly integrative PRI technique. And what we want to do is when that person comes off of your table after an intervention, whatever it is, occlusal intervention, we want them to be able to manage gravity and say, you know what? I love my right side, but I got to learn to love or at least like my left side and go back and forth. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to use looking to the left. We're going to use bite awareness. And we're going to use sensing the ground. It's called grounding. Because if we don't have that heel grounded to the ground, we're going to use tongue. We're going to use neck. We're going to use occipital bone. We're going to use tension and vision. Not a good story. So I'm going to introduce you to Hannah. Hannah works for the Institute. And for all of us that worked at the Institute, we love Hannah. And Hannah loves her right side, doesn't she? She loves standing on her right side. In fact, her shoulder is typically lower on the right. Caught her on a good day. And she's just shifting all hands on deck to the right. Love it here. Love standing here. My brain says I'm stable here to a fault. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to get everybody standing up. And if you would stand up facing this computer, actually, you can face anywhere you want because I'm going to read the instructions for you. I won't be able to watch you, but I'm going to try to coach you through it. If you'd stand and place your right leg ahead of the left and most of your body weight on your left foot, what that means is about 80%. And for all of you standing there, kind of squeeze your left butt cheek a little bit. Tuck your butt under. And that'll put you more into your heel. Okay? I want you to maintain that because that's going to be important to get that left butt, even a little bit of left hamstring, going. If you would even look down and turn your seam or your zipper with a slightly bent left knee toward your left big toe a little bit because I want you to turn that pelvis on top of a femur to actually put the socket better on top of that ball joint. If you would, then drop your left shoulder a little bit and reach forward a bit with your left hand with a slightly bent knee while keeping the majority of the weight going through your left foot. Then what I'd like you to do is bring your upper and lower teeth together. Sense your left bite if you can in the molars. And then I want you to look straight ahead and just turn, while you're doing all this, turn your head to the right as your eyeballs are looking straight ahead. and just hang out there and breathe. Sense the right side of your head, the neck and trunk rotation, as you feel the left foot on the floor and your left upper teeth on the lower teeth for about 10 or 15 seconds before advancing to the next step, which is, and just breathe for a moment. Now, while you keep your left teeth together and your foot connected to the floor, turn your head to the left without your right shoulder coming forward. But your line of vision needs to be straight ahead. So you're turning your nose to the left while your eyeballs are looking straight ahead. Now, what you're learning to do here is independent movement of the head on a neck that is now supporting a head that is rotated to the left. And just hang out there. Sense your left foot. Sense your left abdominal wall gently. Without using the right anterior neck muscle to simultaneously achieve right trunk rotation, you just want to relax that neck. Sense those left teeth, left floor, left abs. Work with the right anterior neck. Just kind of feel that neck turning a little bit. Now we're going to go to the next step. Next step, sense and feel your left teeth, floor, and abdominals as you move your head to the left so they are facing straight ahead. Now, get everything looking straight ahead. Take your eyeballs to the left. Just hold that position and feel that left foot, left abdominal wall. Keep looking to the left. Don't lose your sense of left teeth, left floor, left abs. Now, consider turning your head to the right, keeping a left gaze. So if you turn your head to the right, your eyeballs are going straight ahead. Then back to the middle with your eyeballs going to the left. Then to the right, with your eyeballs going to the left. And take a break, everybody. Good job. Now, is there anybody that has questions or feedback? Because essentially, that is the end of our presentation. And I want to shout out to whoever is in Salt Lake City. Please look me up when I go to Logan. But are there any questions regarding tonight's presentation?
Hey, Skip, thanks so much. That was a great talk.
Oh, you bet, Brad.
So
it was such a pleasure working with talking with everybody tonight.
Well, I want to kind of go back to something you said about people's heads spinning.
I know my
first time taking the cervical course, everything was spinning. And I loved what I was hearing, and it made me hungry to learn more, but it certainly was a lot to take in. And, you know, in less than an hour, you presented a tremendous amount of material. And so anybody listening out there who feels a little bit overwhelmed by it, I want them to kind of rewatch this and just think about and relate back to a lot of the patients that you've seen, and maybe pick one thing to look at, whether it's a jaw position, whether it's an ear flare, and things will start to make sense. But this is something that needs to be looked at over and over again. And a lot of this information for me was the why behind complaints, symptoms. It really gave a foundational reason for why so many people were suffering for so long and why a lot of the interventions weren't working. You'd get short-term relief from some hands-on manual techniques, and a lot of times they wouldn't stick. And so when you start addressing some of the reasons, which could be from the ground up or, like you said, from the top down, and even with a dental intervention as well, all of a sudden things start to soften, things start to work better. And so, you know, I just wanted to say that before we jump into some questions here, and we certainly have some good ones. So with that being said, I'm just going to kind of jump in here first with Anne has a question. What factors influence whether the PRI treatments will hold while in dental treatment?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think the big factors, and all of us have a similar problem with, will a patient follow through with recommendations? Will they actually learn how to find and feel new places to go in their body? You know, the key with PRI is to start people with techniques, especially what we call non-manual techniques, to teach them how to get strong and learn how to go back and forth. If they can learn how to do that, then they get a sense, a new pattern in walking, sleeping, interacting, and they have a way to get back to what's called neutral. So it's kind of a tough question that we hope that a person can integrate this approach, that we can help them actually connect with their body. I think many of us have met people, some are better able at connecting with their bodies. Other people are disconnected. They're not grounded for whatever reason. Maybe they sit too long, or maybe they have a neurologic issue. Don't know, but that's a tough question. I hope I answered that.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add, Skip, too, is the integration of working with the dentist. And there's, I know working, you know, over the years with Howie, how much interplay there is in communication, and that when we start to see changes, that appliance might need to be altered as well.
No question.
That's going to change as well, and that's going to affect gait. That's going to affect positioning. So that's a huge. And Howie, I don't know if you want to chime in on that as well. You know, as far as the interactions and communications that we have throughout treatment.
And so many of us, whatever our discipline is, have learned to do treatment, and we don't think of the process that the patient has to go through that needs a collaborative approach. Because if somebody wears away a body part like a TMJ because of they can't feel the ground, and you just correct that without helping them feel the ground better, then they'll wear it away again. Like there are people who go through major dental treatment and things always break down on one side. Kind of crowns, they have more dental work on one side than the other, and they always attributed, well, I didn't get good dental work done, but it may be a pelvic problem, it could be a thoracic problem, it could be anything else. And that's what I love working with Brad. That's why I said at the beginning, every dentist should have a physical therapist to work with, and vice versa, or maybe now it could be a chiropractor, Skip. But there's so much that you miss.
I was going to say, Howie, I mean, in my profession, there are some, like I was, sort of stuck in the 20th century with my approach. If it hurts, adjust it. But I also have a lot of very progressive colleagues that I want to introduce to PRI because it's so needed. This approach, I think, is just so key with dental professionals. I know chiropractors 40 years ago that were working with dentists. I didn't understand what they were doing. But today's technology with PRI and what all of you do and physical therapy, it's just, I think we're just opening doors here that of discovery that are very exciting.
I'm glad you said that because back in the 1970s, we like took a pause and we're going back to 1970s when chiropractors and dentists and physical therapists and osteopaths were working much closer together. And they were actually doing that back in the 1900s also. Brad, another question.
Yeah, Skip, for those practitioners out there that you know don't have a PRI background, but they notice that someone's in that right torsion position, they have this clockwise face, and a lot of the complaints that you mentioned, maybe visual troubles, headaches, TMD problems, and they've tried a lot of different things without success. They get the sense that they need to integrate with a dentist. What would be your advice when they, you know, call up a dentist? What are they going to say to that dentist? What's a good kind of opening that you want to integrate? And what would your advice be for them to, you know, to send a patient there? And what's a good starter conversation for that person who's really not confident in working with a dentist, but they know their patient needs it?
Great question. First, I look around and ask who's doing work with beyond general dentistry and basic orthodontia and all that, but who really is working with TMD? And, you know, maybe it's Panky or something like that, that sort of an approach where a person that's part of their specialty. They do splints to help people with headaches and et cetera, craniofacial problems. And then I think, first off, it took me a long time to find the dentist I'm working with right now. He just happened to come to a postural respiration course, so he was open to talking. But I said, you know, I'm interested in what you do. Can you tell me more about it? Here's what I do. And what do you think about certain conditions? So I started having a dialogue, you know, over drinks of this discussion we've had tonight, a little bit of those concepts, and then asking them about their approach. And then talking about, for instance, if you're dominant on one side, what do you think about disoccluding that side and relieving the side that is, you know, too occluded? Anyway, I hope that answered it. I think that it's like ask them to do TMD splints, and if they're interested in integrating with diaphragm, airway, etc. I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a really good way to approach it. I want to go back to the last slide and the exercise that you took us through. It's a really powerful exercise, and I've used it a lot successfully with patients before, and I'll have them do that right before they see the dentist to get them as neutral as possible, which is really, really the goal before splint fabrication. If you can maybe talk about what the expectations might be, what people might feel after going through that. I was very aware of the change prior to doing it, but maybe somebody that just went through it and there was, there's some things that you need to maintain during it, but it's certainly something that needs to be repeated a few times to get it. What can somebody expect to sense after doing this exercise?
Awesome question, Brad. Most often, they walk and they say, oh my gosh, I feel my left leg like I've never felt it before. I feel lighter. My arms are more relaxed. And those are the immediate responses. While you're doing this repositioning, you'll notice people, you can put them on their left side, and as soon as they start moving their head, they'll take the weight off their left leg and they will shift their head and body back over to the right. So, but the first thing is, oh man, I really feel my left leg. And there's like a smile on their face. Like, this is strange. That's number one for me. And you know, they also might feel a looser neck for sure. Because if they got the ground better and they sense it and their breathing is more integrated, that'll help loosen up that neck because that OA joint isn't trying to find the ground. In other words, you can imagine that atlas going up into an occipital bone trying to be a ground when it's not supposed to. It's just trying, it shouldn't be a forceful joint. like the heel up into the pelvis. But if you don't have the heel or a brain sense of the ground, it's going to go someplace in your body.
Yeah, that was the most obvious thing, is feeling that connection to the ground. Yeah.
If anybody at the end of sketch presentation noticed anything and wants to share it, type that into the chat box and I can have you even share that with the audience. But we only have a few minutes, so if you notice anything special, type it in and share your thoughts. And while we're waiting to hear from somebody, and have another question from the audience, Brad?
Yeah. Skip, what can be done to engage the diaphragm on the right when there's a S-shaped scoliosis resulting in the collapse on the right?
Yeah, really great point. So we integrate a lot with practitioners that use the Schroth method of scoliosis treatment. They're located in North Carolina, some of our PRCs, Lisa Mangino and others in that clinic. That's one thing to think about. The other thing is that when I have people come in with scoliosis, I do PRI testing with them anyway. They're not going to show up with a severe scoliosis quite like a regular patient, as you know. But I'm still going to do the testing, and I'm going to experiment and see if I can get their body through testing in a more relaxed and balanced fashion. I might have to do a manual technique where we get both sides of the ribcage moving better. But at that point, and that's an excellent question, it doesn't happen very often, but I'm still going to start with my PRI techniques, but use my art, my clinical skills, and if I have to modify, I will. You know, the art is how you manifest whatever healing you do. So I'm going to go with my PRI knowledge, but I'm also going to say, well, maybe I have to modify just based upon what I observe in the moment.
So there was one question from somebody who I think was on another webinar, wanted to know why most TMJ problems in women are on the left side. So that's the question. I don't know whether that's true, but that's what the person asked. Are you find them that most have TMJ problems that are mostly on the left side?
I don't have that experience, but then let's put it this way. I think if you're a dental practitioner, you might see a lot more patients than I do. It just hasn't been my experience. I'll see TMD problems on both sides, but typically, for me anyway, I've seen them on the right. Not that I haven't seen them on the left. It seems like there's a preponderance of right side. That's my experience. But Brad, do you have any input on that? Or Howie? I don't know how
to
answer.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So if somebody is has left side bending, would they tend to have more pressure on their right TMJ or their left?
Could be both. My guess would be the right first. My first would be the right first. However, that position of the jaw depends if they're a torsion patient. You know, if they're a torsion patient, you'll have a torsion patient by definition means the right side of the occipital bone is being pushed up like in a regular left side bending position. But now what's beginning to happen is that the sphenoid wing drops on the right as the occipital bone stays high. That torsion then creates a temporal bone stress like a Teutonic plate, more often on the right side. But I reckon you can have pain on either side, Howie and Brad, and you know, you can have disc issues and inflammation and degeneration for different reasons based upon that temporal bone position.
Yeah, I tend to see more right-sided.
I haven't seen that women have preponderance of TMJ symptoms on either side. It could be, there's so many factors involved.
Well,
that's
yeah,
been my experience.
And I think the dentist in the room, I have to punt on this one because, and even the PTs, because I've seen a lot less TMJ except for the past couple of years when I've started doing PRI. When people came in with jaw pain, I just sent them out to a dentist and say, you know, go see a TMD person or TMJ specialist, not really knowing what the relationship was with the entire body. So I wasn't really effective other than adjusting or treating somebody that was in pain. That was my former practice. That was my primary approach. And, you know, physiotherapy and all that.
The only thing I would add to that is I tend to see more left side bent presentations than torsions. And in that left side bent position with C1 going up on that right side, that's going to elevate and create more of the occlusion on the right TM as C1 is rotating up on the right and back down on the left. That's going to create more pressure on that right TM joint and capsule. Compared to, you know, a torsion, which is going to go either way. So that tends to be more of what I've seen over the years.
And I took a slide out. I didn't really want to get into it.
I have a question. Somebody want?
I was going to say, I took a slide out. You're going to have a lot on the right. What? Go ahead, Howie.
Don't even. Nobody had to come back. You know, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to make, this presentation free to everybody who attended, because there's so much information, and I encourage everybody to watch and rewatch it, as you said before, because you can't understand it just if you're listening to it for the first time. Last question: what comes first, the asymmetry or the airway issue? Which is the chicken? Which is the egg?
Say that again, Howard. You can cut out a little bit.
Somebody has asymmetry. What's the cause? Is the airway cause further in asymmetry, or is it asymmetry cause the airway problem?
Well, the asymmetry we're born with. We're born this way, as Lady Gaga says, right? That's where we come into the world with asymmetry. Is everybody, and so that's not the issue. The issue is our body type, our habits, our history, our lives, mentally, emotionally, socially, how we manage those asymmetries, how we move, how we learn to move as we grow. So the OA is going to be a reflection of our asymmetries. It will always have a tendency to get pushed up on the right side. But the asymmetries we're born with, the asymmetrical patterns we have a tendency toward, and the whole thing with PRI is to recognize and balance out those patterns, to recognize that we're born with these asymmetries, but here's how we are going to be able to deal with them. And as a result, that OA joint can be free, that neck can be free to move, and that airway can be free to breathe, and that neck can be free to relax, and we have a nice, decent occlusion when we bite down.
So are you saying that when things are out of balance and somebody can't get into a more neutral position, whether there's an airway problem or an increasing compensation, that one feeds the other and it becomes a downward spiral?
It can. Now, OA, and we were talking about this, OA can be the top-down driving force for whatever reason. Maybe it's a visual system. Maybe it's an occlusal system that's driving the cranial muscles and the jaw muscles and the neck, driving that issue. And you have asymmetries below, bottom up, that are responding.
So, and when somebody asks a question, how do you know whether somebody needs a PRI treatment first or dental treatment first? How do you decide what goes first?
Great question. I mean,
I'll give you my answer first.
Okay.
That ideally, before you do any treatment, you should have a complete diagnosis. And so one of the things that we're trying to work on are screening questions that a dentist should look at and know if somebody has a postural or structural problem, and dental questions that are physical. So that before you even begin treatment, you know whether you need to have a consultation with another practitioner. I learned that from Brad, by the way.
I'm on board.
All right. So anyway, so anybody who didn't get their questions answered, we will have them. We will ship them off in the truck, in the pickup van to Skip. We thank you all for joining us. I also have taken a couple of courses with PRI courses. I think it's great. It just helps you get a much better understanding of how the body works. In dentistry, with structures, we don't deal enough with functions. And we look at functions of a patient sitting in a chair, not walking or moving or standing. And what any dentist on this webinar needs to know, that how the teeth meet affect how you move and how you walk and how you get grounded. And you really don't want to proceed with a lot of dental work until you look at that. Right, Skip?
100%.
Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next month's presentation?
I want Elise to thank Kelly, everybody for all their responses. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, and good night. Thank you, Skip, so much.
Thank you, Howard.